This is Dialogue Assassination with research specialist Mae Bressel for KLRB. I'm Gloria Barron. Well, Mae, I know we want to get right into it because I see that you have a pile of research in front of you, and I see automation.
Article on Robert Kennedy. Yes. Yeah. No matter how much material I plan to bring in during the week to discuss on the show, Gloria, the morning news comes first. I get up and read the two papers before I come in here, and I try to keep everything current. And this morning, the newspaper said a second gun probe ends the Sirhan RFK trial. The suggestion that Sirhan might not have killed Robert Kennedy has been brought up by persons in Los Angeles. And now the newspaper says a five-month investigation into the reports of a second gun have been denied. And they say that Sirhan did act alone. The district attorney, Joseph Bush Jr., said, "We are satisfied that Sirhan Sirhan killed Senator Robert Kennedy. The controversy, touched off by Barbara Warner Blair, attempted to block the promotion of Dwayne Wolfer, a criminologist in Los Angeles." Now, we have talked about that on this show since June the 30th, when we first began our series. That was 15 weeks ago. And at that time, it was a very secret thing in Los Angeles. The Associated Press, the United Press, were not carrying the story of the alleged assassination of Robert Kennedy by another person who's been named in a suit in Los Angeles in the Ambassador Hotel. And Barbara Blair is an attorney who is blocking the promotion of Dwayne Wolfer on the basis of the mishandling of evidence. And she brought into attention a suit that was filed in Los Angeles in 1970 against the Los Angeles Police Department. And I'm going to go back to that suit because the newspaper article said this. The district attorney in Los Angeles said the case was closed, that Mr. Wolfer made a clerical error in labeling the trial exhibit envelope containing three bullets that were test fired from a gun wrenched from Sirhan's hand. What they said in Los Angeles, now the Attorney General's office down there said, "People are trying to make something out of nothing. You will never put an end to the theories of people who think there were two guns. But the mislabeled envelope had the substitute gun serial number on it, and the package contained three bullets." They said it was a serious clerical error because it kicked off another investigation. Now, I'm going to repeat what the district attorney in Los Angeles said, that some people are trying to make something out of nothing, that the bullets were simply misplaced in the wrong envelope. And I call attention to the letter the attorney general of our state, Evelyn Younger, sent out, stating that there were people who always talk about conspiracies. He questioned the motives of those people. He sent a letter to KLRB referring to my mentioning him constantly on this show, and he sent one to the Los Angeles Times because of the ballistic evidence. The district attorney of Los Angeles, the attorney general of the state of California, do not want you to think anything happened except that three bullets were labeled in the wrong envelope. So I had a lot of material prepared for today, but I'm going to read you an article, part of an article, that was published in August 1970, and I have many, many documents to add to this, but I want to show you what kind of people he's talking about when he says that they want to make something out of nothing. The article that I refer to is from Computer and Automation, dated August 1970. And it begins this way. In May 1970, Computer and Automation published a long article by Richard Sprague, a computer professional and the president of Personal Data Services, entitled "The Assassination of President John Kennedy and the Application of Computers to the Photographic Evidence." On June the 4th, 1970, in Los Angeles, attorney Godfrey Isaac filed a legal complaint against the Los Angeles Police Department and the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office on behalf of his client, Theodore Chirac, a former TV newscaster who was on the scene when Robert Kennedy was murdered. And he charged the police department with deliberately, intentionally, and knowingly suppressing fact and evidence relating to the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy on June 5, 1968. As a result of these two facts, We are publishing in this issue some important articles and reports dealing with the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy and raising three important questions. Whether or not a second gunman actually killed him, whether or not there was a conspiracy, whether computers can deal with large quantities of evidence. The May article on President John Kennedy's assassination flatly asserted the thesis that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the sole assassin, that there was a conspiracy that successfully killed President Kennedy, and the Warren Commission conclusions were false. The articles printed in this issue on Senator Robert Kennedy's assassination say that there is important evidence that and strange silence on the part of the police and other authorities that indicate, number one, there was a conspiracy, number two, there was a second gunman, three, there has been extensive silence about critical questions and extensive suppression of critical evidence. We shall show beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Los Angeles Police Department, in particular Mr. Robert Houghton, at the time Chief of Detectives, L.A. Police Department, have suppressed extremely important information. By applying computers to the collective facts of each assassination, computer people can diminish the credibility gap and perhaps find a more complete and accurate account for the assassination of the Kennedy brothers and Martin Luther King Jr. Because of garbage in and garbage out, computer professionals are intimately concerned with the accuracy and completeness and the factual truth. Consequently, in those areas of political activities where factual truths are being systematically concealed and factual lies are being more or less systematically told, a computer professional has a responsibility of searching for truth. We are computer people. We are also Americans who need information in order to exercise the democratic powers as citizens of the United States to the fullest extent. A large amount of the vital information that we need in this role is not published by the established newspapers or magazines, and it appears to be in the less reputable news media, and it seems that they have an axe to grind, and this is unfortunate. In the case of the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy, the investigation was almost entirely carried out by a special task force selected by the police department. This force was under the direction of Chief of Detective Robert Houghton, Special Unit Senator. After 4,818 interviews and many other official actions, they officially closed the investigation July 25, 1969. A 10-volume report of Robert Houghton, Chief of Detectives, was titled An Investigation Summary to the Senator Robert Kennedy Assassination. These 10 volumes are the official account of the investigation. Only three copies apparently exist anywhere. In the conclusions, Robert Houghton said not one shred of evidence exists at this date to indicate any conspiracy in the death of Robert Kennedy. But since his book contains no index, Computer and Automation has since made an index of that book. And they point out just some significant questions that they are going to put into the computer. Question one, how many bullets were found in people, in walls, when Senator Kennedy was assassinated? Answer, no answer to this question is found in the book, but the evidence exists that there were 10 bullets found, whereas Sirhan's gun contained no more than 8. Question two, what is the list of all the persons with and near Senator Kennedy at the time when he was shot? Answer, no answer to this question is found in the book. He also said which of these persons had guns, and no answer was in the book. Question three, a temporarily employed hotel guard was accompanying Senator Kennedy and drew his revolver at the time Sirhan shot at Kennedy. What was his name? What information about him is found in Houghton's book? Answer, his name was Thane Eugene Cesar. He's mentioned in one sentence in the book, and no other information is given in the book. Now, the computer, I'm ending the quote here, Computer Automation has a long article with where the bullets were found. One recovered from Kennedy's head in the Good Samaritan. One was from his back, his neck. One from Paul Schrade's head. One from Elizabeth Evans' forehead. One recovered from the abdomen of William Weisel. One from the left thigh of Ira Goldstein. One from the lower left leg of Irvin Stoll. Two from the center divider in the pantry. One from the door frame. Total, 10 bullets. From an 8-shot revolver. Then Computer and Automation has a diagram of where the people were standing in the theory that there were two men with guns drawn. I have another whole issue of computer automation, which has the charges of Barbara Blair that were made out with criminalist Harper from Pasadena. And we have done these on a show, and I also did it on KIDD with Dick Bragg. And I will bring that in next week because I don't want to do the whole show on Robert Kennedy. But I want you to know, and we're going to refer to that suit in Los Angeles against the police department in lieu of something else that came up in the news today. We're talking about bullets that don't match the gun that is there. The direction that the bullets came from doesn't match where they said Sirhan was standing. The ballistic evidence that Barbara Blair is talking about that's going on in Los Angeles has absolutely nothing to do with whether the bullets were in one envelope or another. And at this point, it's just up to the people of California to say that answer is not, the case is not closed. If you people are satisfied with that answer, well and good, you take it from there. But this isn't what it's all about. We've talked about it for weeks. This is the most incomplete kind of an answer. It's the kind of an answer Adolf Hitler gave to people when he was accused of his lies. And Gloria, I hope that we every week bring this up. I don't want people to think that that is the answer.
Well, if nothing else, the carelessness of the police department should pique the ire of Los Angeles people.
Well, of course it should. And I don't think, now when we came here last week, we were talking about Charles Manson and the Tex Watson case. And the very day that we were doing this show, a statement came out that Charles Watson now has been convicted along with Charles Manson. And the Los Angeles Police Department made the statement, this is the final chapter of the Tate Bianca murder. All five killers have been convicted and justice has been served. Now we'll do a little more on this show. I'm going back to the Manson program we did last week and show you that this isn't the final chapter of this thing. And as a matter of fact, I could do it right now because we made our show last week, and the very next day, Esquire magazine came out with an article on the Charles Manson case, an author by the name of Ed Sanders. And I want you people who are listening, because I have a lot of people who are following now, I think I've gotten into their heads what I'm trying to say and what I'm trying to do, and I'm going to talk slow. I want you to get your pencil now, and I want you to write down the Esquire magazine of this month, and I want you to buy it or borrow it or sit with a group and hold it and read it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that article because Ed Sanders came out with a book which I bought this week, the same author who wrote the article in Esquire, and it's called The Family. And I made the statement that the Manson people, Tex Watson, were agent provocateurs. We defined that word last on our last program. They were people dressed up in costumes of supposedly to be hippies because they used drugs, because they were free with their sex and had beards. They were supposed to be hippies. They were racist. They were Nazis. They were anti-black. They had no part of the flower scene or the hippie scene at all except to take on all the outward role. They were products of Manson, of our prison system, I said before, and what is worse is that Charles Watson is the product of a Puritan ethic, a repressed, acceptable member of our society, and in order to justify his slaughters, we put him with all the garb, put him in a bus, and called it a hippie massacre. Now, when you take your Esquire article and you hold it, and people will have to bear with me who didn't hear their program last week, some of it. I want you to read Ed Sanders tells you in his article that Charlie Manson was at Esalen and Big Sur and went back that day to the ranch and said to the three girls, get your knife. He said to Linda and Sue, and he said, get your knife, get your change of costume, and go out and do your thing. And leave a sign and be witchy. He gives them instructions to be witchy and go out. And they went out that evening, and supposedly, according to Ed Sanders, the three girls and Charles Watson went out and went to the home of Sharon Tate and did their massacre. Now, mine is Vapor Articles of December the 4th, 1969. One of the girls involved in this crime, by the name of Sue Atkins, she was the first one to talk, said two men and three girls went to the residence. One man had a gun. The girls had knives. They parked their car. They were dressed in black clothing. A man with wire cutters went up the pole outside and cut the wires. They saw a parent, that's one of the boys who was killed, starting his car. He got in the car and they shot him. Then a man went through an open window and opened the front door and the others went inside. Now Sue Atkins on December the 4th, 1969 said there were three girls and two men. Now when Ed Sanders writes his book or his article in Esquire, on page 112, he says that three girls and Tex Watson went to the house, and he goes into all the details of the murder. Now, who is correct? Sue Atkins, who said there were two men there, or Ed Sanders, who writes a book and says there was one man, because Charles Watson was home on the ranch, Charles Manson. It's confirmed that he wasn't at the scene of the crime in any way. So we have Charles Watson and the three girls. Now, which one is right? The girl who was there, who was saying right off the bat, the two men and three girls, or the author later who's to cover this thing up and say one man and three girls? We don't know which one is right. But in his own book, Ed Sanders describes, and in Esquire magazine on page 112, he describes a lengthy thing of how the crimes were committed, who was stabbed, where the bodies were placed. But then he says, this is in quotes, there were indications that someone had been there to move the bodies from the time that the girls left and Tex Watson left and when the police arrived. And he says that there was pool, large amount of blood spilled by the front door, and Sharon Tate and J.C. Ring had not been there, according to the three girls and the boy, when they gave their testimony about it. There was a towel over one head that wasn't there before. The rope was tied tight where they said they were walking around. So Ed Sanders, in writing his book, notices that there are discrepancies and comes to the absolute positive conclusion, in quotes, there's indications that someone had been there to move those bodies from the time and the girls and Tex left and from the time the police arrived, based upon the length of the ropes, the towels on the face, the pools of blood by the door. Now, I come to the conclusion that he says there was another person there. I say there was another person there. I say the Los Angeles police didn't look for that other person. And they wanted in advance to say that Matt Manson masterminded this case. So even though he was home, they had decided, like with Lee Harvey Oswald and James Ray and Sirhan Sirhan, that Charlie Manson was going to take this rap. And the police evidence indicated, and the author indicate themselves, that someone had been in on that massacre after the others had cleared out. Sue Atkins said there were two men. Therefore, the Los Angeles Police Department has not looked for that other man at all. Now, that's the way I do my research. If she said there were two men and the trial comes and only one is tried, where is the other person? Now, we talked last week about Charlie Manson and his money and his trip. And those of you who heard it, I question, where was he getting all of his money? When the Esquire article came out the day after I did my broadcast, it tells how Manson was in jail for 6 years and 9 months. And he walked out of there March 21st, 1969, with $35, a suitcase of clothes, and 32 years old, within 72 hours, and holding a guitar, using mysticism and the Gru Babel, he descended upon Haight-Ashbury. Now, I'm reading you from Esquire. In the early months, he went north to Washington State to find his mother. Another time, he went east to West Virginia. And it was in Sacramento that Manson seems to have bought an old yellow school bus large enough to hold his growing youth pack. In October 67, at the Chevron station in Sacramento, they got a new battery for $39, tires for $216. They moved the seats, created a living area. As time oozed by, they put on an icebox, a stereo set, floating coffee table suspended by wires and pillows. They painted the bus black, and then the entire family hit the road and took a swing into the Mojave Desert, back to L.A., through Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, deep into the South, Mississippi, and Alabama. Now, last week we talked about Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and we talked about Texas, and we talked about where were they getting the money, who was paying for this bus. You see, as we talked last week, I was bringing up the question of where did the credit cards come from? Where did the master charges come from? If we have time later, I'm going to read more of the goodies they bought, like they had a stock of 100 gallons of gasoline and parachute covers and automobiles and material possessions and cameras from NBC, and they were shooting thousands of feet of film and sending porny movies to New York to be packaged and sold. Who was processing them? Who was developing them, editing them? This was a total military operation, and I think that you taxpayers were paying for this trip, this bus trip, for these 30, 40 people. They lived on a ranch where there was a swimming pool. But last week, we talked about Charlie Manson, and I think if you people read the Esquire, and if you know people have back tapes, and if you missed it, listen to that broadcast, then read Esquire, and then think about what was Mae Bressel trying to tell you about this man or this massacre that was done to effect a change in our society, an economic revolution. It's a complicated thing to get into our heads, but I think the article came out right after our broadcast, Gloria.
Yes, it did.
And I really think people should try. If they want to understand what I'm saying, they should try and read it. Now, yesterday I had a conversation on the telephone with two people that I referred to on the show. One was Bernard Fensterwald. I called him because of something that was really interesting in the newspaper, and we're going to share it here, going on the Los Angeles Police Department. And I didn't know if he saw it, and he hadn't. The Washington Post and the New York Times carried an entire article. It was in our Chronicle here, but deleted two sentences, and we're going to read those on the air. We may as well do them right now while we're to it. Because we were talking last week, I defined agent provocateur. And because of the broadcast, and so many people are listening, I got phone calls Saturday from people. Listen to KPFA in San Francisco and LA, there was this agent who was talking about the double role that he played in the Los Angeles Police Department. And all of a sudden, heads were clicking, and people were remembering what we're talking about here. And how this man, his name is Mr. Tackwood, Lewis Tackwood, and he called a press conference in Los Angeles. I'm sure that most of you know about it by now, but I'm going to give you a rundown in case you haven't seen the article. Lewis Tackwood called a press conference in Los Angeles, and he's 28 years old. He used to be a criminal, and he gets off of heavy wraps and is not arrested because he does informing work for the Los Angeles Police Department. And I've said that Charlie Manson or James Ray could get out of jail and do heavy things for our government police, the FBI, because, or their local police, because they're promised that they will get out of jail and they're used for certain things. Now, Mr. Tackwood claims that the two Los Angeles Police Departments, Criminal Conspiracy Section and the Special Investigative Section, are guilty of dirty tricks and murdering, and that they're out against all the militants, whether they be black or white. And he said he had prior knowledge that criminal conspiracy section had prior knowledge of the Marin County Courthouse kidnap escape attempt and George Jackson's failed escape attempt from San Quentin prison, and they let both proceed. I have to end the quote here to make a comment that my research shows me that there was every reason to believe that they knew about George Jackson and that the Attica thing was set up, because coming from New York, prison guards and members of the prison are saying they couldn't have just taken that prison and dug those trenches and moved the way they did without the guards knowing. The guards let it happen. And who was the hero of Attica? Well, it was all over. A lot of people think Rockefeller is not a hero. He is. That was like a joust, I call like a middle age type, you know, where they used to do King Arthur's court. You proved your manliness, you know, through these acts of murder, or like in wartime, your generals. Rockefeller proved that he was among the men when he could do this act. He all of a sudden got in the good graces of the wealthiest Republicans who had their annual dinner in New York, and he got standing ovation for his decision. And now he's among Reagan and Agnew and Connally and the really big boys. He's a man among men where the money counts. And he's invited. Now he's on the real circuit. He's no more liberal. You know, if Chase National Bank and all their doings with oil in the Congo and Vietnam can be called liberal, they thought Rockefeller was a liberal, but he turned out to be a man. But getting back to the Los Angeles Police Department, and this informer is saying they had prior knowledge. I know they did, and they also gave that gun to George Jackson. I've mentioned that here on the show. The guard stood there while it was handed to him. Now, this agent is saying that they funneled money through himself. He was the man who gave Ron Karenga, head of a U.S. organization, money if the weapons would be used to kill the Black Panthers. Tackwood said that the officers had instructions to make controversial telephone calls. He made one August 18, 1965, that there were guns stashed in the Black Muslim mosque. There were no weapons there, but he was to call and make that call. He alleged that Melvin Cotton Smith, the principal witness in the current trial of 13 Black Panthers, was a police informer, an agent provocateur long before December the 8th, when the raid on the Panther headquarters was made, and that Smith turned state's evidence. He claims that the Los Angeles Police Department and the FBI have a special squad to provoke violence at the 1972 Republican National Convention, which will be blamed on leftists. The object to create a situation which would permit the president to invoke emergency powers and arrest and detain political activists. End the quote here, man. I want to go off and say this was the remark that people called me about on the telephone, and that you've been saying this all along, that these provocateurs of the throwing the rocks at Nixon in San Jose, or the Oda massacre, or the Manson massacre, all everything, the killing of Martin Luther King, all of these things are done at election time to gain effect and put certain people into power. The killing of Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy was to take them out of power. That was to remove them drastically, but the other was to effect changes. And this brought phone calls to the House, you know, from people who said, this is what you're saying, that this group put on costumes and dress like the radicals and mingle with the radicals and bring the guns, and that gives the chance for repression that Richard Nixon wants. He charged that he had worked in the San Francisco Bay Area as an undercover agent and spied on militants and spied on the blacks. And it said when Tackwood disappeared in mid-September, after making these allegations, he fired off letters to the district attorney Joseph Bush and Evel Younger and John Mitchell. He made a lot of these charges against these particular people and demanded an investigation of what was going on in. And Tackwood approached the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and Newsweek magazine, and they began to investigate Tackwood's disappearance. He made the allegations, and then he disappeared, and they wanted to go into what they called the San Diego Plan. Now, Tackwood's credibility has been questioned, but they've given him a polygraph test, and they have found that much of what he said is true, and he claimed that he has done a lot to put a certain defendant on death row, that he was used as a witness in a trial. I mean, these are some of the allegations for the people who didn't read yesterday's Chronicle. He said the two black Berkeley city councilmen corroborated that he had worked in their campaign, and that he claims he was placed there as an undercover agent. A motel manager remembers him being registered with two white men who were C22 agents, and Tackwood claims it was at the time of the election campaign in Berkeley that he was sent to spy on the militants. The motel manager says he was there with these two white people. Tackwood is a black member of the Los Angeles Police Force. He said in April 1970 he was used and considered a reliable witness to put a man who is now on death row, a defendant on death row. He said the newsmen discovered that he did have a tap telephone that he talked about with an extension in the Los Angeles Police Department so he could talk to people and then their information would go to the police department and he could turn them in. Now, in this newspaper article, there's a lot of allegations about the Los Angeles Police Department and the squad and the George Jackson breakthrough, and he mentioned a black militant training center in Santa Cruz he infiltrated. There was a prominent black man that was murdered in Santa Cruz, and I'll do a story about that if I have time next week. You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Bressel. This is KLRB Stereo FM, Carmel by the Sea.